All right, let's go ahead and take our Bibles and go to 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Is where we're at. Nearing the end of the chapter, and so we're going to try to, we're probably not going to cover all of the verses, but this is probably going to be the last thing that I mention in verse in chapter 12, and then we're going to skip chapter 13 because we went over that in a different study, and so we'll then jump into chapter 14 and try to make our way through the end of 1 Corinthians. But chapter 12 is where we're at, and of course from chapter 12 we launched into spiritual gifts and learned some things. At least, if we didn't discover our own spiritual gift, at least we learned what? Who wants to venture and tell us what we learned through spiritual? What's the main thing that our desire is to grasp out of understanding the spiritual gifts, or at least looking at them? Anybody want to venture to share? Logan? Okay, so understanding the rest of the body, right? Understanding that we're all made differently, right? We're one body, and we're going to look at the one body tonight. We're unified, but within that unity, there is diversity, okay? So there's differences. And sometimes we tend to do what with diversity? Okay, tonight I'm going to have you, I want to have you talking. Go ahead. What is our tendency with diversity? Okay, we could ask why, we could question them, and from that comes critical spirits, right? You know, we could say, you know, why are you different? Why are you that way? What else? Any other thoughts on what's the danger? I mean, diversity is a beautiful thing. It's a good thing we're all not noses, right? Well, that's what the scripture is telling us. It's a good thing that we're all not the same. But what's dangerous with diversity? And of course, Jim already shared a little bit. Anything else? Any other thoughts? We can get critical and, okay, we can fight, we get bothered, right? Because we don't understand why people are working a certain way. And so, Linda, yeah. Yeah, from that, then we can kind of favorite certain people, and we can unfavorite certain people, and we end up in what the passage we're going to look at tonight. We talk about the divisions, okay, the schisms or schisms that some people say, you know, those that are there happen. And we're going to look at that a little bit tonight. And so diversity is a wonderful thing. And Logan is right. We need to learn to appreciate the way other people operate. Is it very apparent that people operate different, even in our small body here? Do people have different ways of doing things, different methods and different styles, but listen, we need to learn to appreciate how God made people. In fact, God has tempered that together, and we're going to look at that word for a bit tonight as well. And so we're grateful for the things that we've learned, but we want to focus on the unity tonight. This morning we looked a little bit into that as well in the book of Philippians. Learning to, who remembers, there was three thoughts from this morning. First of all, we need to do what with the body? We need to remember each other, okay? How many of you would say that was an area this morning that you thought, you know, I could use some help in that. I'm going to be the first one to raise my hand, you know? We need to remember. Okay, sometimes we can forget each other. Isn't it so amazing that we live in our own world? Of course, that's amazing. I mean, of course, we've got our own lives. But isn't it so easy to get locked into what we have, what I have going on this week? And we can easily forget other people. And so we need to remember. Okay, what's the next thing we looked at? So we remember people, then we need to, okay, we need to be thankful for other people. We need to look at what other people do and how they contribute. How they contribute to the body. You know, and I'm so thankful for the things that you do, things that people do to help this body go together and to make things happen. So very grateful. And we need to remember to be thankful and thank God and thank people. When was the last time you thanked people for the things that they do? When was the last time you thanked an usher for collecting the offering? When was the last time you thanked a nursery worker or a cleaning person for cleaning? When was the last time you thanked your DBS leader for faithfully helping you through the passage each week, and so on and so forth? And everybody has something. When was the last time you thanked that other person that attends sitting down the pew from you that just seems to have a smile on their face every week? You know, we need to thank people because it contributes to the whole. And so we're thankful. So first of all, we remember each other. Next, we're thankful. And thirdly, we learned that we need to pray, intercede for each other. And we need to be praying in this diverse, this diverse body. We need to be thankful, but we need to pray for each other and to intercede. And we're going to be going into that in the next couple weeks in Philippians chapter 1. All right, you're going to notice some parallels here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. We're going to start in verse 24. Probably we can actually go back even just a little bit let's go ahead, and let's go back just a few verses from a few weeks ago when we looked at this. Let's go ahead and verse 14, for the body is not one member but many. If the foot shall say, because I am not the hand, I am not of the body. Is it therefore not of the body? And what's the answer? Of course it is. Of course it's part of the body, but we're different. And in the first part here, he's saying, you know, we've got to be very careful that we don't underestimate what God has given to us just because we're not maybe that one main part. Maybe that upfront person doesn't mean that God doesn't have blessing for you. In fact, tonight we're going to be looking at encouraging the body. We're going to see that God has special encouragement for those people that aren't necessarily up front. And we'll look at that in just a moment. You're still a part of the body. If the ear shall say in verse 16, because I am not the eye, I am not of the body. Is it therefore not of the body? And again, the rhetorical question is, yes, you are the body. You are a part of the body. And you, listen, everybody listen to this. You are important here. You are important to us. What God has gifted you with, what God has blessed you with, how God has even, let's go into the talents and desires and things you do. Praise God for what you desire to do. You know, without you, we lack. And if every one of us, you might say, if I wasn't here tonight, there would be no lacking in this body. I would argue with you based on the scripture that we're just reading. But I tell you, it wouldn't take very long for one or two or three people to be missing that we would even notice a difference. And in that, in noticing that, then we begin to realize that we are lacking. And so we need to understand that we're all a part of the body. Verse 17, if the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? But now God hath God set the members, every one of them, in the body as it hath pleased him. Tremendous passage, tremendous phrase there. God has set you where it pleases him. God has made you and created you. We learned that in our week, didn't we, this week, when we went back to Genesis and saw that everything that he created was good except for when he created man. And when he created man, it was very good. And you know, and the church, God has created very good, and he has placed you exactly where it pleases him. He is pleased that he created you to be gifted in this way, and he is pleased that he created you to be gifted in this way, and the whole body comes together and it pleases the Father. He looks at this and he says, it's beautiful, it's beautiful. Now keep that in mind as we continue on down through this. So he says, listen, God has created this perfectly. He set the members, every one of them. He has set you. He's ordained you to be where you're supposed to be as it pleases him. In verse 19, and if they were all one member, where were the body? There would be no body. There would be no body. If every one of us were a bicep muscle, you know, in our arms, and we piled everybody together, it would not be a body. It would be a pile of biceps. Okay, we couldn't accomplish anything with one thing. And so it is blessed that we are many. But now are they many members, yet but one body. And that I cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee. So now before we were looking at, well, I'm not very valuable. Now we cannot look at other people and say, you know what, we could really do without them. That's a lie. We cannot do without them. Okay? that I cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee, in verse 21, nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Nay, he says, no, much more those members of the body which seem more feeble are necessary. Those parts that aren't up in front. You know, we can look and say, boy, it's essential that we have a pastor. If we have a pastor, everything's set. That is not true. In fact, this verse tears that down. It's saying, you know, some of the parts that we look at and say, you know, not very important, those parts, if they were missing, we would be a wreck. You take one little part, you know, you ever had your little toe and there's a hangnail on that little toe? You ever had one of those? You know, and you put on your shoes and you walk around, and how do you feel? Kind of miserable, don't you? And does that tiny little thing, I mean that tiny little thing, and you're like, oh, why did I do that? Why did I cut it so close? Why did I, you know, I've done that before. It's like, why did I go for that extra little bit right there? And now I'm limping around and it hurts so bad, and all because of that one tiny little insignificant part. Brothers and sisters, we've got to be so mindful of the fact that every part is so important, and don't trick yourself into thinking that you're not important, but don't believe the lie of the devil that says other people aren't important. Everybody that God has placed here is very important. Those members of the body which we think to be less, this is verse 23, to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. Now I want to tell you, verse 23 is the basis for what we're going to look at. Notice that he says, upon these. And who are these that he's talking about? This is the middle of verse 23. Who are these? He says, and upon these. Who's these referring to? Go ahead, look at what it says right before that. He says, and those members of the body which we think to be less honorable. Okay, that's the these that he's referring to. He says to those that we think, notice he says think. He doesn't say they're actually less honorable. Those that we tend to estimate in our minds as less honorable, that's not that important. And you might even say about yourself, you know, oh, certainly the pastor's position is much more important than mine. I just clean the church. God is saying, see, we have problems with our thinking. We think that they're less honorable. We think that they're not very valuable. We think that we could do without them. That's what we think. And he says here, he says, which we think to be less honorable, upon these, and this is an instruction here to us, upon these we, and if we could say, and I'm not trying to correct the English here, but he's saying, upon these, we should bestow more abundant honor. I titled this challenge tonight as Encouraging the Body. The challenge for us is to choose to encourage the body. Now, just jump ahead. I'll come back to verse 23. Jump ahead to verse 24, and we can scratch our heads a little bit in verse 24. For our comely parts have no need. Now, doesn't that phrase bother you just a touch? What does that seem to be? Try to think with me here. What does that seem to be saying? It seems to be saying that there are some people that we don't need. Doesn't it seem to say that? It says, for our comely parts, we don't have any need. He's not saying those parts, which, by the way, let's take a time out. What does it mean, the comely parts? Now, very simply, the comely parts might be the desirable parts. Do we have on our bodies some parts? Now, some of us would say, I have nothing desirable on my body. But we understand there are certain parts of the body that typically everybody looks at and says, that's ugly. Cover it up, right? We don't want any of that. We don't want that. But there are other parts that, you know, obviously we think seem to be presentable, or at least we try to make them presentable. And those, you know, we're willing to show, but there are other parts that we certainly want to cover up here. The comely parts can talk about the desirable parts, but a lot of this practically is talking about the things that are seen, the upfront things. The things that everybody would look at and say, well, of course, that is very important. And we all understand that we tend to think, and it is because it's true, God has placed an under-shepherd over us. We'd look at the pastor and let's be real. Is it important for a church or for the sheep to have a shepherd? Is that important? Absolutely it is. One of the most dangerous times for a flock of sheep is when there is no shepherd. And that is why when a church goes in that period of time when a pastor leaves and they're looking for another, you know, excuse me, another pastor, that's a dangerous time. Not because the sheep are so bad, even though we are, aren't we? But it's because there's not an under-shepherd there that's just there to help lead and to listen to the shepherd to know how to lead the flock to excuse me, the green pastures and the cool waters. I better take a drink here. So, it is important that we have a shepherd. Now, what he's referring to here is he's referring to, let's say, a pastor. And he's certainly not, there's two definitions when you look at a Strong's definition of this word. It's not, I don't believe that he's talking about the desirable parts of the body. I can tell you that is not the point. If you look at it, the second part of it is not just the desirable part, but it's just the upfront. It's the face value part. It's what's seen. It's the demonstration. If it's the preacher, it's Caleb Reed last week. If it's me, it's me right now. If it's a song service, it might be Rick, or like tonight, you know, it'd be Zach. If it's somebody doing a, you know, some special music and they're playing a solo on a violin, it might be that person. It might be a leader of a group of people, you know, maybe, but with the young people back there, you know, in a Bible club or a Sunday school class. It might be the teacher there in nursery. It's going to be the teacher that's there in a senior saints ministry activity. You know, it might be the leader that's there sharing something. We're really not talking about something that's specially endowed by God, you know, some special person. It's the parts that people see. Does that make sense? And those are being referred to in this passage as the comely parts. It's very easy for the comely parts to have the encouragement that they need because they're up front doing the work, and a lot of times, unless they're really bombing out, people are thankful for that. I hope you're following with me, because this is going to be very important for us to understand. Okay, these are the comely parts. Don't think that God is saying, you know, these are the beautiful parts. You know, this is a beautiful part of the church. No, he's talking about the upfront people that are doing the work, you know, and the people see that the tendency is what with those people as far as encouragement? The tendency is that they receive that. You know, okay, after what's going to happen after the service? Well, it might not. But typically, I'll be back there shaking hands, and people come through, and they'll shake their hands, you know, say some things. But typically, you know, on a given time after preaching, you know, somebody say, thank you, I needed that, I appreciate that. Thank you for doing the work to, you know, and studying to present that to us. And, you know, I'll get some sort of an encouragement. And by the way, that's an encouragement to me. That's a blessing to me, and I receive that. But see, that's normal and that's natural to happen because, why? Because I'm one of those parts that tends to be up here at face value. It's very normal when a person plays or does some special music, or a group comes up here and they sing, or somebody plays something or does something. It's very normal for that person to receive encouragement, isn't it? Because that's what we do, and that's what we're supposed to do. And we say, thank you very much for doing that. But it's not normal for a person that's maybe they're doing things, but they're sitting there and they don't get recognized. It's not comely. It's not up front. We're not talking about ugly and you know, the runts of the church that just weren't endowed with any goodness. Get that out of your mind. That's not what he's talking about. It's the people that are not up here. They might be doing lots of work, lots of service, lots of helping in certain ways, maybe anonymous in what they do. Those are what are being referred to the uncomely. They're not seen. And what he's saying here is it's very natural for those ministry people that they're being seen all the time, it's natural that they receive something. Put it like this. If I had maybe I should have brought a whiteboard up here, but we're going to say that the comely parts or the seen parts, their level of encouragement naturally is going to be here because that's what we do. And rightfully so, and God made it that way. In fact, he doesn't say that's bad. Go around and discourage them. No, that's not what he's saying to do. But they're up here. But then you've got what he calls the unseemly or the uncomely parts. Those are the parts that are just not in front of people. Doesn't mean they're not doing anything. In fact, he's saying that they're very valuable. But what he's telling us here, look back at these verses. Look at verse 24. For our comely parts have no need. What he's saying, there is not that we don't need them. Everybody listen to this. He's not saying we don't need them. Do we need a pastor? Yes. Do we need Sunday school teachers? Do we need song leaders? Do we need people playing special music? Do we need those people? Of course we do. He's not saying we don't need them, but what he's saying is their level of encouragement, there's no lack. There's no lack there. Does that help you understand what it means when it says that there's no need? This passage is talking about encouragement. Going back to verse 23, he's saying, listen, there's not a need there. He naturally makes it that there is going to be encouragement. And by the way, you ought to encourage the people that are in front of you. And that's I'm not putting in a plug to encourage me. But I'm talking about the people that are in front of you doing things. You ought to encourage them. But that is kind of normal in what happens. So he says in verse 24, he says, they don't have a need. They're already up here. They get that. Are you all with me here with this? They got it. They're up here. They're not anything special. They naturally get the encouragement. But he says, but God hath tempered. That means that he has designed. He has orchestrated. He's taken all the parts and he's put them in a certain way that he wants to. He's like, okay, this person is going to be seen. They're going to get plenty of encouragement, and that's good, and I want that, but they're going to be here, and this person is going to get some encouragement too, because they've got a part that is seen, and people are going to recognize that, and they're going to get good encouragement. But then there's some people down here that they have some other parts, and they're not going to really be seen, and they're going to actually look and appear to the body as something that's not very important. And what he's saying is, those people, there is a need. It's not saying that these are needy, weak brothers that just are lowly, good-for-nothing people that we really got to work on encouraging. That would go against this whole context. Didn't he just build on the fact that everybody's needed? We're talking about encouraging. See, because sometimes those people don't naturally get people encouraging them and thanking them for what they do. You know, when was the last time you found out who the person was that, I could make up anything, that did this at our church? You say, well, I don't even really know who does that. And the fact of the matter is that supports exactly what I'm saying. You don't know because it's not seen. Somehow it just happens to get done. Now we know better. Does the work in this church just happen to get done? No, it gets done on purpose and somebody's doing it. But you see, a lot of it isn't up front. A lot of it is not seen. And so these people are not, it has nothing to do with ability, gift, talent. It has everything to do with what's seen and what's not seen. Comely parts, uncomely parts. And what he's saying here is he's talking about encouragement. He goes back in verse 24. He says that God hath put every, he's tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to the part which lacked. And the point that we need to look at is God has worked it out, that he's put certain people where he wants, and it is our responsibility as a body to go around and encourage those people so that we can make the gap like this. That everybody in the church is being encouraged. It's natural to encourage some people. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for doing that. We appreciate what you do. But what about the other people that never hear anything like that? It's our responsibility to search out those people, not looking at who are the runts of the church. No, who are the people that do things? Who are the people that are probably doing things? And I never, you see how this dovetails into this morning? Finding ways to be thankful for people. Remember, you know what? We forget about, there are some of you that we don't even, we forget about certain people because you might be here every Sunday and you're another face, but we tend to look at the people in front of us and forget about the people who sit right next to us. And those are the people that we need to, God has ordained it that we encourage them. That's what the Apostle Paul is saying. God's made it that we go around and we find ways to say, you know what? You are never, I don't know, has anybody ever thanked you and encouraged you? And I don't know what the answer would be. Maybe yes, maybe no. But we need to find ways in which we say, you know what? I appreciate you. And I'm thankful for you. And that's the honor that God intends for those people to get so that everybody, and I don't think he intends to do one of these. I think this is the way it is. He intends for us to do one of these. Does that make sense? That way everybody gets honor from each other. No, we're not supposed to praise ourselves. Let another man praise thee, though, and that can be a blessing from God. It's our responsibility to bring that honor to other people. And so back in verse 23, and those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, again, those parts that are not seen, upon these we bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness. That really right there is saying this. We need to make the uncomely parts comely. Bring them up to the same level. Don't just praise the people that are in front of you. Bless and praise the people that are just there doing their thing to make this church be our church. The church is not the building. The church is the people. It's the people. And we need to build up the church. And we need to recognize how God has made us. What would James call it when we look at each other and we respect certain people in a certain way and not respect other people? What does James refer to that as? I actually gave you the word. A respecter of persons. And what does James tell us? What is that? Chapter 2? Those quizzers, yeah, they need to know. Chapter 2, okay. So chapter 2 speaks on being a respecter of persons. What was the idea? Should we be a respecter of persons? No. What does that mean? Somebody tell me, what does it mean to be a respecter of persons? I really have told you it already in the first part of this message. What is it? It's preferring certain people and giving them honor over other people and not giving them honor. And I think somebody said in the back, what happens when we do that? That's what we're going to get into. What happens when we really elevate one group of people, the group of people that we see, boy, they're doing all kinds of stuff. And they probably are doing a lot of upfront things. But we prefer them and we like to be around them over the people that we don't see doing anything. What happens? Well, let's look at the next verse. What does he say? And so we're doing this, we're recognizing this, and we get to verse 25, that there should be no schism in the body. What does that word mean? It means to separate the parts. And we're talking about the body and all the parts. And in a sense, when we elevate certain body parts over others and say, boy, that's comely. We're so grateful for them. I'm so grateful for them. And they do this, and I'm so glad. You know, we have everything to owe that person. And we neglect a lot of other people that come day in and day out. They're faithful. They've got a smile on their face. They're helping to do this. They're doing that. But we don't see it. And some of us don't, it's not even that we're trying to do that, but inadvertently we end up doing what? Making this gap so much wider. Oh, we're going to praise this side more, but we won't ever do anything here. And what ends up is a divided body. A divided body. See, it's important for unity. It's important for church unity that we encourage everyone. No one should be left out. This passage is not saying the upfront people don't ever encourage them. It's saying take the ones that are not very much in the light and start encouraging them so that we're all encouraged. Everybody is being encouraged. Everybody is being encouraged. Every one of us should be encouraging one another in all kinds of different ways. That there be none of these separate parts. That there be no divisions. Oh, folks, we've got to be so careful that we are not a part of dividing the body up. And I'm telling you, he's at the heart of divisions in church when we elevate certain people over others. And it's not always just the persons that are up front, although this context is talking about the upfront people as opposed to the people that aren't up front. But we can divide up our body any way we want in groups. We have a tendency to do that. There's a certain group of people that we like. Sometimes churches are divided up because of age. Older people talk to the older people. The young people always stick to the younger people. And, you know, middle-aged people only talk to the middle-aged people. And sometimes it's a class. Sometimes there's classes of people that, you know, the wealthier people, they get together because they've got things in common. And the poor people get together because they've got things in common. And the middle class, they're right there. But folks, every one of those things we've got to be so careful with, because what does it do? Divide the body. It divides the body. We are one body. And we've got to act as one, that there be no schisms in the body. So we've got to be so careful not to divide up the body. God has planned that the body is equally provided for and treated. We don't treat certain people over another. We treat everybody equal. We treat everybody right. That's why it's so important. I wanted to talk a little bit more about it this morning. That's why we need to get to know everybody. If you don't know people in the church, you're not going to treat them at all. You're just going to avoid them. It's time that we get to know people and get to hang around people and be with people and get to know their needs, get to know what we can pray for, get to know how we can be thankful for them, get to know, just remembering those people. Now let's get to verse 26 here. We've got about 10 or 11 minutes left here. I wanted to get to this. Verse 26, very practical. And whether one member suffer... Stop right there. What is he referring to with suffering? You think he's just talking about getting thrown in prison and beaten? We could put that into that category. I would say, you know, if one of you gets caught this week doing so, well, not, hopefully not for anything bad, but if you get thrown in prison for, you know, let's say you're witnessing to somebody and somebody, you know, praise the Lord, that doesn't happen in America, but it could. You know, you're witnessing to somebody and they throw you in prison. Can you imagine? I would consider that suffering if you'd get thrown in prison for that. That'd be suffering. But we're not there yet. Now, we could come to that in the future. But what's the scope of the suffering here? What do you think? What do you think he's talking about? It's probably a wide variety of things. Logan? What's that? Okay, maybe neglected by certain people. Maybe people at work, you know, kind of put you aside, or maybe they make fun of you because you act a certain way and you're just different than they are, and so they treat you a little bit different. And in some cases, you could say that you might be suffering that way. Let me ask you a question. We know that suffering can be a godly thing, but on a human level, is suffering something that we desire? You guys like to suffer? I don't, okay? I'm just not one of those guys that's just like, yeah, I'm suffering now. Now again, I love the passage in 2 Corinthians where Paul talks about, you know, when we're weak, we're strong. You know, there's a part of that that can almost be exciting when struggles are going on if we have a very godly perspective. You know, kind of like Joseph we learned about several weeks ago. You know, Joseph had this amazing awareness of God that when he was weak, he knew that he was strong. And I know he didn't know what Paul was going to say years later in 2 Corinthians, but I think that somehow Joseph understood that when he was weak, he was strong, and the power of Christ rested upon him. Because he looked at his perspective and he said, man, God's doing something amazing here. But in a sense, none of us like to suffer, and we understand that element, but suffering's a negative thing here. So when you're suffering, what kind of things do we suffer in? Do any of you suffer physically? Are there some physical suffering that people have, that people right now in our congregation are suffering physically? Absolutely. Do some people suffer financially? And they lack. They don't have the money to pay bills, or they don't have certain, you know, things to live or whatever. People certainly suffer that way. Do people suffer socially? Looking for feedback. Okay, people have struggles with family members or people at work, or, you know, just social issues. Do we struggle with social issues? Yeah, we do. Emotional things. Do we face emotional struggles? Fear. Anybody get fearful of anything? Am I the only one? Okay, we get fearful. Do we worry? Anybody worry? Get anxious? My hand's going up for all of these. Okay. Do we suffer? We do. We're humans and we suffer. Is it a part of every person that's here suffering in one of these ways? Yes? One way or the other, we all suffer. And what's the instruction here? Because we're one body, and we're not elevating some people over others, when one member, and he doesn't delineate whether they were the ones that were naturally here or naturally here, when one suffer, what does he say? We all suffer. Steve would know this on an electric panel. There's some that are single, and they operate one thing, but some of them are doubled up, aren't they? Something usually bigger, right, Steve? But that would be maybe require more power or something like that. Okay, why, when you take one of them and when you turn it, what happens to the one on top of it? It goes with it, doesn't it? Why? Because they're tied together. And so when I take that breaker that's got two on it, and I flip the one of them, the other one, it automatically flips also, right? Automatically, because there's a tie there. It's solid into the other one. And so whether it's the bottom one or the top one, when I flip it, both flip. Folks, listen, God has tempered and made it to where, although there are some that are naturally encouraged, there are some that are naturally not encouraged, God has made it and tempered and designed it to where we encourage one another, that when any one of these goes through something, the other ones automatically tied into the other do the same thing. Because we're tied in. When one does it, the other does it. He starts off with suffering. When one suffers, we all suffer. Now let me ask you, is that what we do? We ought to. When we go through our Sunday and we're walking down the hall and we can see that somebody's struggling, and we could use the word in the context, suffering from something. Maybe they're not feeling well physically. Maybe they're struggling financially. Maybe they're going through some social things, and we might not even know, but we see the suffering. Folks, what we automatically ought to be doing is, even though we might not, this is not about feelings. It's almost impossible for me to feel everything that you're feeling. You know, if Pastor Dan comes into the office tomorrow and I can tell he's struggling, if I can say, boy, he's almost at the point of tears, it's going to be hard for me to just kind of like start crying. But you know what? If he comes in and he's struggling, I might not feel it, but I'm going to just automatically, just like that breaker, I'm going to go with him and I'm going to be there and I'm just going to do everything I can to care about what he's going through. Because we're one. We're a unit. And when one suffers, we all... he's a part of the same body. It's the body. And when the body hurts, the body hurts. We all go through it. If he's going through something, then I'm just going to go through it with him. And so we've got to be concerned when we see other people suffering in any one of these ways. Physically, spiritually, emotionally, socially, financially. And there's probably other ways out there. But when we see that, we need to choose to go right there with them and struggle. You're not going to have the same emotions. And I don't even think that it means that if it's financially, you've got to, you know, empty your account so whether you're the same. But it's to go through it with them. To care through with them, to encourage them so that we can get them with everybody else that's encouraged. The same spot. And we adjust ourselves with other people. We need to learn to adjust. And so when one suffers, we all suffer. He goes on beyond the suffering. And so whether one member suffer, all the members suffer. And notice, he's not just talking about, you know, if one is suffering, one other one should go and join him in his suffering. Is that what he says? If one is suffering, we do it together. You know how big of an encouragement that is when you're struggling with something and 60 other people join you with what you're going through? I mean, hand in hand. They're struggling. We are struggling. We are struggling because this person is going through this. We're all struggling this way. We're all struggling. Now, you can't do anything about other people. I can't make Ken struggle for caring. I can't do that. But if I will struggle for caring because he's going through something, and Ken decides to struggle, and you decide to struggle, and we struggle... And the point is not struggle. The point is to join them. And what we're trying to do is encourage everybody to the same plane. I tell you, the key word in all this is encouragement. But I'm going to come alongside and I'm going to join in that suffering. But he goes beyond the suffering. He says, you know, if one suffer, all members suffer with it. Or one member, be honored. All the members rejoice with it. In other words, God just does some things in a person's life, and this guy's on cloud nine. He's excited about something. You know what? We don't walk around and be like, Boy, I wish that happened to me. What we do is we're like, I'm so excited that God has blessed you and I'm joining. We as a church are excited and we're encouraging one another together. Folks, we've got to do a better job at this. And I'm speaking to myself. When we see people that are going through difficult times, we need to be there to help them and to lift them up. Practically, you tell me, how are some ways in which we can do that? Okay, someone gets sick. What are we going to do? Now, this morning we talked about praying. Is that a good thing to do? Yes, but are there more things to do than just pray?
Like help them out if they're sick.
Yeah, like tell me. So, there you go, okay? If you don't have the, you know, some of you say, I can't make soup. Then go buy some soup, right? Let's do something. Let's go get something. Why? Because this is going to help them. They're lacking there. What else could we do? Somebody's going through a loss. What could you do? Send a card and tell them. You might say, I don't know what you're going through. I've never lost a parent. But Jesus has. Maybe put a few verses on there or something. You know, that does amazing things. And you know what it does? It does this. Mm-hmm. It encourages people. Folks, a lot of times we see people that are suffering and we just kind of, God help them. Sometimes we see people really encouraged, we say, I wish I had that. And we tend to do this. And we stay there just like this. And we're acting in our diversity and not in our unity. You see, this passage tells us you're diverse and God is blessed. We need to be thankful for it. But we also need to be thankful for the unity that we have. And we need to work on being unified. Together as one. We are one. As a husband and wife, we understand when one of them goes through something, the other one goes through it. But folks, it's not just the husband and wife. It is the church. When one goes through it, we go through it. You know, if somebody were to say to you, I heard so-and-so in your church is going through it. You know what? And you might not need to say this. But the answer according to what we're learning is, no, we're all going through that. Oh, I heard this person's going through this. No, we're all going through that. Now, you don't need to say that. That might be taken the wrong way. But the point is that when they're going through it, we are going through this. This is not just their trial. This is our trial. I want to ask you a question. If you're the one going through the trial or the rejoicing, doesn't that make you feel a whole lot better that you've got another 60 people that's right in with you? In everything that we're going through. I think he covers the whole spectrum when he says suffering and rejoicing. And everything in between. Faith Bible Church, we need to do a much better job at joining in with what people are going through. How are we going to do that? Well, we've got to pay attention to them, remember them. Right? From this morning. We need to remember what they're going through. We need to be thankful for the people and everyone, not just, we need to bring them up and we need to pray. And I would put along with our prayer, help in any way that we can. Close the gap and get everybody encouraged in the things of the Lord. Why? Look at verse 27 and we close. What's the key here? Now ye are the body of Christ and members in particular. You see, this can only happen as we are the body of Christ. We're Christ's body. We're not this body and this body and this body. We are Christ's body. We are together. I hope that the two messages combined can be a help to you as we remember, be thankful, pray for one another, as we learn to encourage everybody in the church, not just the upfront people, don't neglect those, but everybody. even if they don't have a place that you can identify and see. In fact, if they don't, the scriptures teach us very clearly, man, we got to work on those. Not because they are so lacking, but because we're one. We're one. Father, would you help us to act as one? We are so good at dividing up. Because we are, as James calls it, we're very good at being respecter of persons. God, would you help us to look at the whole body, the whole congregation, everybody, and not qualify them as useful or unuseful. Lord, you've taught us that every one of us is valuable. God, help us. Lord, I pray that you would use us to be a blessing to one another. In Jesus' precious name we pray. Amen.